Folks, welcome. It's Dr. Pompa, and if this wasn't edited out, you would see that Dr. Pompa is here, starting the show by himself for the first time. They trusted me to run the ship, and sure enough, if you were here live, you would see what actually happened. If you're watching the recording, you're gonna miss some antics on Dr. Pompa's first show that he got to do by himself. But I assure you, it wasn't just my fault. Things happen. Now, I am here with an amazing client of mine, Cameron George, who you're going to have the pleasure to meet and hear his story. And I had talked a little bit about Cameron's story, I think, before when I talked about fasting and the need for fasting. And, fasting saves lives. Fasting, really is one of those things that dives deep into the innate intelligence and utilizes it. And the body just knows what to do. It shuts down, oftentimes, our desire for food. And sometimes we force people to fast, and in Cameron's case, his body, his innate intelligence, forced him to fast, and I've seen this many times. But Cameron, welcome, and say hello to our viewing audience.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for having me. I'm always excited for these conversations, for sure.
Absolutely. You know, and I said this on one of our flip-flopped failures there in the beginning, you coming on with the technology issues. You know, I believe, Cameron, I really do love you and appreciate you, because I believe, like myself, you got sick for a reason, and you're called to something greater. You really are. You're a pleasure to work with. You're a pleasure to coach, because you're such a bright young man, and it's your story that is going to give you and already has your authority, just like in my case. So with that said, Cameron, I want to go back. I want you to tell them the story. I could never do it justice, but I remember the first time, that I heard your story. I mean, my jaw hung wide open. I mean, I took notes, and the copious notes, I mean, just pages of notes, because I really wanted to capture, there were so many unique details. So take us all the way back. There's a lot here, but let's see if we can,
Right. Yeah, I mean, the depth and complexity of my story is just pretty vast, and I, just thinking about this, I'm trying to just hit on the most high points, and if there's anything that you want to elaborate more on, then I can just do
okay.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can just, start, where I'm at now, kind of, and then go back. So basically, my most complicated set of symptoms has to do with, chemical sensitivities and severe autoimmune, hyperreactive to everything in my environment whenever I was at my worst, absolutely, right. And so that's, it led me, my entire process cumulatively led me to, the point just being incredibly, incredibly sick to where, for a very long time couldn't leave my own home or anything,
yeah.
and, everything under the sun reacted to. So I think that it's easy to, well, it's relatively safe to hypothesize at this point in time that I, just going back, because me and my parents and, my doctors and, everybody who I've actually gotten help from and kind of going with that upstream thing and investigating, we've just talked about it endless times of trying to go back to my childhood, trying to go back as far as we can and try to get a good picture of what my biggest stressors were and how I ended up here, because it didn't happen overnight, but it was a long process. So, I mean, it's pretty safe to say, at this point that I came into the world, right, at birth with a level of probably genetic susceptibility, and it was obvious to my parents really from well, I don't know about day one, but it was obvious pretty quickly because. I'm a family of three brothers. I've got two brothers, one older, one younger, and I definitely was kind of like the black sheep of my family. Behaviorally, everything was just something, and my parents always described it as, they didn't know how to describe it. They just thought that I was a little bit harder, to deal with and handle, but I was still in a functional range to where no average doctor, your family doctor down the road is going to say there's some, bad wrong with you. But they started small, and it tended to have this snowballing effect over time. And, I was just, as a child, as a baby, I was just, I guess now we could say that I had the, I had an impaired ability to be able to adapt, physically, psychologically, and emotionally, to you know, to anything, really. So everything new I was always afraid of. I was just sensitive, afraid, you know, psychologically I was either doing really, I was either really happy or I was really, really sad, crying, throwing tantrums, you know, every single thing that I would start in my life, whether it be learning to swim, whether it be, you know, riding a bike, it always happened much later because I was just, I would get in these comfort zones and I was very afraid to step outside of them, you know. So it was just, I was more of kind of like a fragile, you know, and, you know, they saw that, which led to actually me having a lot of different, you know, behavioral pathologies and stuff too that just made me, you know, much more prone to impulsive behaviors, you know, because now looking back on it, now what we know too is that, you know, obviously, you know, susceptibility and then who knows, you know, vaccines early in life or, you know, all that kind of stuff or whatever my mom had in her feelings and things like that. Just, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, anyways, you know, my behavior was such at an early age that I was incredibly impulsive, you know. I was constantly looking to, and, you know, my belief at this point, kind of, you know, self-medicate to kind of get to a certain feeling or a state, right, which I felt comfortable in myself.
Right.
And, you know, having imbalance, right, whether it be neurologically, obviously biochemically and stuff, you know, there ended up at, you know, at a certain point in my life, because I was so scared of certain things and ended up, I just felt I had this instilled sense that grew over time of inadequacy. And actually, you know, the show, you know, what, 2 weeks ago you guys were talking about orthorexia. Yeah. I really resonated with that on so many different levels.
And I
can tell you why too, but just kind of just, you know, an instilled sense of inadequacy at some point because there was something wrong to where I didn't have the confidence to do anything, then it ended up getting made fun of, you know, I was kind of all over the place in a lot of ways. And it started at an early age with me just subconsciously, not consciously obviously doing it at the time, but just, you know, when we look back at the behaviors that I did, everything was kind of a, you know, a dopamine chasing behavior, right? You know, I would go after, starting from as soon as I could start choosing what I wanted to eat, and even before then, I was incredibly picky. But, you know, it started out with things like the, you know, self-medication, things like the drug-like foods, you know, the super sugars, everything that I wanted to eat and was so picky. And, I mean, that's kind of normal for a kid, but for me, it was to the extreme. Like, I would cry, I would do anything that I could, and I would only eat, you know, the breads. I would only eat the crackers, the cookies, all this kind of stuff. And that was really something that I just sought after, not just as a fun thing, but then whenever I would eat too, I would binge eat, and the binges got worse as you know, as time went on. You know, I remember just you know sitting and you know buying. Once I got old enough to where I was actually going places on my own, I was carrying around all the money that I had, no matter what that was from allowance when I was a kid or wherever. And, you know, I was going out and I would just go to places like the gym where everybody else was playing basketball, and I would buy, you know, hang out there all day, and I would buy soda after soda after soda. I would drink sodas all day. And literally just feeling like that I had no control over it, right? When I got to the end of that soda, I remember feeling absolutely depressed. Like, what am I gonna do now? You know, it was that bad to where it was like I really felt like that I had to have it. And obviously, so those things, you know, obviously created more problems.
Yeah, and then just to, you know, fast forward a little bit, it went from that addiction to running. I mean, running.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because you really, you know, the OCD behavior came out there. I mean, you were running, and I'm going from memory here. I mean, 100 some miles a week.
Yeah.
Am I right on that?
Yeah. I when I got to the point when I was in college, I was running about 140 miles a week. And that was, you know, there are a lot of guys, elite athletes, that do that are able to find some way to create kind of a homeostatic balance around their training where they understand stress, rest, and they do certain things to do that. It's very hard to do, and I certainly wasn't doing that because at that point I was using running, you know, basically as a drug. You know, I was using it to keep my head above water because I wasn't functioning. I wasn't feeling the way that I needed to. I had chronic fatigue at a very early age, you know. You know, like I said, you know, with the foods graduated into, you know, you know, a little bit heavier things, like becoming an insane caffeine addict at a very early age.
Yeah.
You know, drinking sodas all day. I mean, for years, I drank soda more than I did water, you know, for sure, hands down. And I was just, I would do anything for a soda, and I would be, I'd be mad when we, you know, when we went out to eat. I was a kid, right? And I, you know, my dad would say, hey, you know, you need to get water, you know? It's just because I was constantly seeking, you know, I was seeking medication on some level, and it's safe to say now. And I never just felt right, and I didn't really think about it. I just was, you know, I just figured that's the way that I was, you know? And, yeah, and so that, you know, graduated to, you know, obviously worse and worse things. And I hit a point where obviously the foods and stuff became a problem, and I was a little bit obese, and so that created a lot of different, you know, problems emotionally, because now I'm in the, I'm, you know, about at the age where it's important, right, to look good, you know, the junior high-ish type of age, right? And so now I feel even more inadequate and create, you know, some of these emotional, you know, deals. And so then I go firing back and I switch, you know, my addiction, which is always what I was doing. I was switching. Yeah. I was always trying to find the right answers. Right. You know, I'm someone, I wanted to be healthy, but I just had no clue. So right. I said, okay, I'm going to switch it, you know, to something that is healthy. I found distance running, which, you know, I still love to this day. I think that there's a healthy way, you know, to do it, a very unhealthy way to go about it, you know. But I found that once I found that, I just rolled with it. I mean, I put absolutely everything into it. But, you know, because I didn't really, I still was using it kind of as, you know, a drug, if you will.
Yeah.
I could never keep my training balanced. And I put so much, an enormous amount of effort into it. I mean, the way that I would train, you know, overtraining was always my problem in that, you know, for sure. Hands down. I mean, it was just, yeah. I couldn't stop myself.
Yeah, and which, you started to get injured after a while, you know, and
yeah.
injury started coming, you know, that you predicted that, right?
Yeah. So there was always the highs and the lows when it came to that. You know, I was either running really, really well just because I was putting out so much effort, but then I would just crash. I'd have like three injuries at once. I'd have like an Achilles, a knee, you know, this or that. And then obviously I was totally crap for, you know, months or even. And then I'd get extremely depressed based on that because I was putting everything into that. And that was my current level of, you know, kind of, you know, self-medicating what was going on inside my body in order to feel a certain way. But yeah,
yeah.
And you know, that, you know, so that, you know, started, you know, sometime in adolescence, early to mid-adolescence sometime, and, you know, probably 12 years old or so, and, you know, I did that for several years, but then, you know, in that time, I still was doing, you know, caffeine stimulants, and at some point, I switched to drinking Diet Cokes, because now I'm concerned about my weight, so it's like, you know, I was under the illusion, just like everybody else was, right, that, you know, okay, well, I've got to stay light for distance running, right, I've got to do that, you know, and I was so focused on it, so... So, yeah, I just started drinking Diet Cokes.
Let's fast forward to what I believe is a tipping point. You know, I do want to talk a little bit about, you know, so you got the job. I guess distance running, I guess you should bring that to a close. I mean, you got injured, you weren't able to do that, but you ended up at working at Best Buy, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Then Best Buy, and I believe the tipping point was the apartment. So let's get there.
Yeah, so... So yeah, so the whole distance running thing, obviously, it got to a certain point. I crashed, you know, finally. There was this up, down, up, down, up, down. I ended up going and running in college at the University of Arkansas, and that stress just became even more and more and more. And so I accumulated so much stress, like we said, the 140 miles a week, to where all of a sudden, literally, I just crashed and literally had like three injuries at once. And so that was what I was totally dependent on that, you
right.
know, to be function and things, you know, to be able to function, to feel good, you know,
probably that's gone now.
Yeah.
So that's gone.
Yeah.
And so, because you couldn't do it anymore, literally, you
right.
literally couldn't do it. So,
exactly.
Is that when you started working at Best Buy? I mean, how did, like, where was that?
Right, trip? Right. So I crashed, and all of a sudden, now I'm on the couch for, like, weeks, months, you know, and I dropped out of all my classes. I was in college at the time, you know, University of Arkansas, and I whatever was masking my symptoms, which would have been obviously the insane amounts of working out and things, now it's kind of the veil was unlifted, and now I'm on the couch with debilitating chronic fatigue. I couldn't force myself to do anything. I was so depressed, so everything. Months went by. I moved back in with my parents' house, And then, you know, that was the point in which they said, you know, hey, we need to get some help. And I wanted to get some help too because I didn't know what was wrong. So what do? I go to the campus psychiatrist or whatever. Or I think we shopped around a little bit. And I ended up seeing a psychiatrist and just kind of put my total faith in them at the time because I was just desperate for something that could help me. And then obviously they said, well, you know, they gave me all these labels for my symptoms, you know, anxiety disorder, you know, depressive disorder, this and that, and then attention deficit because I couldn't focus and things like that.
Label you, then they're able to medicate you.
So, right, exactly. Sure, so they gave me the label, and they told me, okay, well, but, you know, you're in luck because, you know, we've got all of these great drugs that actually, you know, I believe they referred to Adderall as a miracle drug, which, yeah, you right. know, now, you know, it's kind of a laughable thing, you know, but, yeah. but, yeah, and so I ended up being put on Adderall. And that was really the big tipping point in which my life, I was already chronically sick, right? I was chronically fatigued. My body was giving all these symptoms, and I was just trying to control it wherever. But, Adderall was a massive stress for just, you know, it was a massive stress.
If I had a nickel for every, you know, call that I get with, a damaged kid from Adderall, you know, and what it does to the brain. It always starts off pretty darn good. And then
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Error. But anyways, yes, so that was a tipping point for you.
Oh, it definitely was because it's like, you know, I'm susceptible. I've accumulated a lot of stressors. I couldn't get off the couch, right? So I'm already sick as we know now, you know. And now, you know, we say, okay, well, you know, they told me this drug can get you off the couch immediately and it'll get you back working and functioning and it's a miracle drug. It's just great, you know. I mean, you know, all these kids are on it and it's absolutely great. And obviously, for me, someone who is prone, you know, my situation is prone at the time, was prone to going after stimulants of any type. So obviously, Adderall was going to have me, you know, at hello, you know. You know, it was going to have me from the beginning and it was just I was going to be addicted to it because obviously, yes, you know, the first time you take it, when you're debilitated on the couch and everything like that, instantly, obviously, it gives you endless energy and you feel like Superman and all of the things that, you know, so it's this massive, you know, it's this illusionary effect because we don't really understand at the time biochemically how it, you know, creates that. And then, you know, that it's,
thought you found your answer. You became Superman again, right?
Oh, absolutely. And so, that worked in the beginning, or I thought it did. Even though it made me feel good, but really, my perception under the influence of a drug like that was never balanced. I just had massive rush of dopamine all the time. I felt good, but really, a lot of times I got less things done while I was on it just because I was all over the place, you know?
Yeah.
But sometimes I did. So I did that, and all of a sudden I was able to go back out. And I had already previously worked at Best Buy, actually, that you mentioned. You know, 3 or 4 years before that. So I went back and was just trying to get back on my feet, and my goal was to get back into running eventually after I took care of my injury and stuff. So I got back and I was working in Best Buy, and man, you know, the longer that I was on Adderall, I lost my mind more and more. You know, just it's no different than a drug addict on the street. Yeah. I mean, because you know, Adderall is an amphetamine. Okay, yeah. You know, it's speed. And, you know, whenever we see it's got the same mechanism of action that meth does. And you see how it destroys people's lives. And it does. It totally hijacked my brain, which that's kind of what drugs do. But it hijacked it in a way that it took all of my pre-existing impulsivities and just put them on steroids, you know. Yeah. I mean, it put them on steroids to the point, you know, once I was doing so many things, I was working at Best Buy, you know, and whatever, I just started doing things that at the end of the day, I didn't even recall what I was doing. You know, it's almost like they were doing themselves, which this is the experience that you get if you talk to, you know, people on campuses who take Adderall. They say, you know, oh, I love Adderall because I take Adderall and I have a paper to do and it does the paper for me. And I don't even remember doing the paper sometimes. It's kind of, So I was doing that, you know, and before you know it, I was going on buying sprees, applying for credit cards, doing absolutely crazy things. And then once I was on Adderall more and more and more, I just became much more uprooted from kind of this objective reality that a healthy person would experience on a day-to-day basis, you know? And that's what happens to all drug addicts. That's why, you know, drug addicts act in such insane, irrational ways, you know? And but, you know, it appeared that it was working right, because now I'm working 16-hour shifts, no problem, you know. I'm like employee of the month at Best Buy. I'm bouncing all over that place, you know.
Like, you're employee of the month like every month, I think I remember saying.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly, like month after month after month, you know, and everyone was just like, I mean, I'd just be right from customer to customer just jumping in their face, you know, and they're just like, and then I was very incredibly articulate because it's like a brain steroid. It's like an override to the brain. You're, you know, for those front parts of the brain that you can just talk really quickly and you can be really, you know, smart on your feet, whatever. But yeah, you know, it just, it precipitated a whole host of different, you know, circumstances and events that unfolded after that. And I just continued to go farther and farther outside of my reality. Massive buying sprees. Once you're on a drug like that for a long time, you know, you tend to start to connect with people who are in a similar unhealthy kind of cognitive state or state of perception,
always.
Right? Always. It is, because what's going on in here, you know, you don't like to be around the people that aren't necessarily like you, because those people make you feel uncomfortable. You would rather, you know, they don't support your justifications. Because me, inside me the whole time, I knew that what I was doing was not fixing the problem, but since this was hijacked, there was always a justification every single day. So I continued to do that, and you know, continued to, as that unfolded, you know, before I knew it, I've got a whole host of incredibly toxic people in my life that, you know, before I was around all healthy guys. Distance runners is like totally 180, you know. You know, now I've got a whole new set of problems, because where there becomes, once I was on Adderall for a period of time, my system was so jacked up. Now it's brought my brain and my body out of balance enough to where now we have to add in other drugs to control the symptoms that are created by the imbalance, right?
Always the way. Always
exactly.
The way.
Which is why you know, so many people end up on cocktails of drugs later on down the line when they go this route, you know. And so, you know, before I know it, I'm on, you know, I'm on Adderall to get up in the morning. I'm on, you know, a benzodiazepine like Xanax or a Klonopin to go to sleep, or alcohol was what I was doing at the time. You know, I just turned 21, so I had the
access to that.
Yeah, I know exactly. And it got to the point where, you know, obviously just like with any drug, you know, you get, you know, tolerance, right, receptor tolerance, to where all of a sudden you need more of the same substance to get the same effect, you know. And I was doing that, but it just created an insane set of circumstances. So like I said, you know, the massive buying sprees included everything from, like, I had a good employee discount, right, like at Best Buy, and I was buying things and, you know, and then, you know, reselling them because I got them for cheap and stuff and doing all this kind of stuff. And I had an apartment. I had a 700 square foot apartment that was full of just thousands.
This is what I've been waiting you to get to. I mean, this is amazing.
Yeah. Just to paint the picture of where this insanity took me, you know. I had a 700 square foot apartment that was full of, you know, at any time, dozens of very expensive flat panel TVs, speakers, you know, speakers that are like, you know, $2,000 a piece. I mean, we're talking, you'd walk in here and it was like an electronics store where I was just at work all day, and I was like, I never left work without buying something, right? You know, and I was constantly just on my line. I was flipping things, I was buying things, and all that kind of stuff. And then that wasn't enough, and so I'm like, well, I got to have something more interesting in my apartment, you know. And so, you know, before I knew it, I was buying exotic animals. It started with dogs. I got a couple dogs. I got like a Great Dane and a German Shepherd, which, you know, 700 square feet, you know.
Yeah, but by the people watching this, this is for real, okay?
Yeah, this is absolutely for real.
I'm pre-framing him for the next part. Yes, this is.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, when you're in these kind of hyper-impulsive states that are just so imbalanced, you can't, there's no control, and I just go higher and higher and higher. My behaviors do too, especially since I was already, prone to impulsivity, you know, before this. And I ended up buying, so just cut to, I ended up having a 700 square foot apartment with thousands of dollars of electronics everywhere, high-end electronics everywhere in my apartment. It looked nice. Nice furniture, nice everything, incredibly nice. I had three monkeys, two dogs. I had two exotic parrots. And, you know, I had some other things coming and going, you know, some different small reptiles, things like that, you know. Even I actually had, like, a fish tank that had some piranhas in it at one point, which was, like, totally insane, you know. you find these people, I had to, you know, had some breeder who was willing to sell me anything I wanted to, you know. And it was, but my apartment was just a direct reflection of the chaos and the imbalance that was taking place in here. Absolutely. And that's what I created, you know. And it was just, I mean, it was a cluster. It was absolutely just insane. I mean, it was absolutely insane. But not only that, you know, the toxic people that were around me, endless life-threatening, horrible situations came of that. People coming over, people doing things. I was impulsive. I ended up just having, you know, so much money charged in credit, but also from, you know, buying TVs and then reselling them and doing all these kind of things. I ended up, you know, just buying things for people, you know. At one point I was so out of it, I just bought somebody a car, like one of my friends, you know. I was like, hey, you know, you want a car? This is never prior to my Adderall situation would I ever have done any of these behaviors. Yeah. Absolutely not, you know. But I was literally just, I mean, for lack of a better term, I was tweaking on the stuff, you know. Yeah, I had to use that term because I can't think of anything else. But
forward, just due to time. So these animals, yeah. I mean, start. I mean, they're pooping and peeing all over.
Yes, right. Right. So that leads us. Yeah, that leads us into that. So one toxic maintenance, which would be the Adderall, precipitated deeper imbalance, which led to more unhealthy, you know, decision making processes, which were the animals and all those different types of things. And then now I'm way in over my head because I'm delusional. Yeah, right. I'm straight up delusional, and I get all these animals and have no clue what goes into taking care of these things. And so I end up with an apartment full of animals that there's poop everywhere. I mean, the amount of poop. I had a room full of dog poop, like literally. I mean, the amount, like you couldn't even see the floor. And it wasn't even the just, it didn't even register at some points because I was out of it and I was all over the place. I was at work. I was doing a million things. I was out partying with this person or that person at this point, which never was a part of my life before that. And I just would come back and I was just like, nah, deal with that later. There was, you know, I mean, there was animal feces everywhere, bird, you know, monkey, everything. I had to have people, you know, next door, you know, girl next door actually come and babysit my monkeys and change their diapers. And
another tipping point was the parrots died. Right?
Or then Right?
I mean, there was like the bird, the canary in the coal mine was the parrots, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Like literally, canary in the coal mine.
They're getting sick, right? I mean, it's like the animals start getting sick. Hello, you're living in a toxic environment.
Exactly.
So the parrots die, and then go ahead from there.
Right, yeah. You know, so that's actually even worse than the canary, because this is a parrot, an African gray that's supposed to live 60 to 80 years. He was 5 years old. I come in one day, and he's dead, you know? Actually, one of my monkeys died first, and it's about as likely for one of these types of monkeys that I had to die as it is for a human child to die. That's what I've been told. At least it's very close because they're primates. He died first, which was devastating. I mean, that was just a horrendous thing to watch and experience and everything for sure. And he just died, you know. And I came back, and he was laying in his own vomit, and he was already gone. You know, then I got scared and I rehomed the other two monkeys because I didn't want anything else to happen. And I came in, what was it, the next day or 2 days later, and my parrot, like I said, he was dead. And so my animals were like dropping like flies. And now I'm to the point where even in my kind of, you know, amphetamine-induced state, I'm thinking, you know, okay, you know, something's wrong here, obviously. So then I think I even asked my dad. We started talking because at the time, they didn't know about any of this stuff. My parents didn't until later on down the line. But I remember, you know, going to him and asking him, you know, do you know anything about mold inspecting or anything like that? I don't know, but there's something in the air, right? You know, I mean, there has to be. And I think it was a combination of a few things, right? You have all that waste product that you have that's just accumulated everywhere.
Yeah.
And only in someone in my condition could justify that, first of all. But so you have all that, ammonia or whatever is coming off of that, in a small enclosed space, you know. Then you've got, then I got to a point where I was like, I couldn't stand the smell anymore, so I was like, I'm going to clean it up. So I went to Walmart in the middle of the night and bought, you know, dozens and dozens of different cleaning products, Febrezes and Lysols and everything that I could find, and just sprayed whole cans of things everywhere. I mean, I dumped a massive amount of chemicals to try to cover up that smell. Because at the time, I was just looking for that, you know, that fix, right? You know, that quick fix to it, you know, to get the smell away. And
same thing with your brain, right? It's like, you know, with your body, you did with the apartment. Let me just, you know, quick fix this.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
The bottom line is your dad finally comes in.
And, yeah.
And, oh my gosh, like what's happened, right? And they start throwing up carpets and, you know, just an absolute, between the mold and the chemicals, an absolute disaster.
Absolutely.
I mean, and he said he got sick for a few days, him and his friend that helped right after dealing with it, right?
Right. And he just almost had a nervous breakdown seeing that. He was like, this is not my son at all. This is like something you see out of Hoarders, as you know, someone's, you know, severe psychological imbalance, or, you know, someone that you see out of I don't know. It was, you know, it's something that you'd walk into an apartment and see off of one of these TV shows, Breaking Bad. I don't know, you know. Yeah. It was something that
I saw that episode. That's exactly what I envisioned, right? When the party, the people like sleep. Disaster. How could anyone live this way? Only because of what the drugs did to their brains, that this was acceptable.
Absolutely.
Cameron, that was no doubt the same experience you were having with a different drug called Adderall.
Absolutely. I was living in a totally alternate, I mean, it's like everyone around me, right, that is in a healthy range of functionality. You know, we're all occupying the same space, but when you are a drug addict, you cross a certain line, a certain level of imbalance, you perceive the world in an entirely different way, so you're experiencing an entirely different reality. And suddenly things become okay that they never were, and just behaviors are just absolutely crazy. I mean, there's really nothing that I can think of that'll drive the brain and the perception of someone out of balance faster than drugs. Because that's what they're engineered to do, to create a quick...
The tragedy is these are legal drugs that actually...
Yeah.
You know, Adderall is stronger than cocaine, really. I mean, it's...
Absolutely.
You know, and, of course, you know, you this was an extreme, right? I mean, you were set up for it from the toxic, you know, childhood all the way through. But, you know, I hear multiple stories somewhere in between this, right? It's doing the same thing where it creates this false reality. It creates this stimulation, and then they start using things to bring it down. See, when you give Adderall to a young child, it actually calms the brain. When you give Adderall to an adult, you know, you get this amazing stimulation. You know, there's an opposite effect. But anyway, so, you know, just in the sake of time, because I want to tell people where you're at now, right? I mean, so,
yeah.
I mean, your dad comes in. Of course, you're sick. I mean, and you know, your parents are amazing people. You know, they really
absolutely. Are. Absolutely.
I've met both of them, you know, via Skype. You know, that's the way, the virtual world. You're my virtual client. But, you know, and they're amazing people, and they've done everything for you. And, you know, so they, you know, brought you into this, you know, healing. I mean, they got you into some, you know, serious therapy, you know. But, you know, really, you know, fast forward, because you end up with literally allergic to your world, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Chemically sensitive. And by the way, I hear this story day in, day out. Chemically sensitive. Food intolerances. Basically now you can't function.
Absolutely. Yeah, and just to kind of skim through, you know, a couple different things. After I was that sick, my life broke down very, very quickly. I had a lot of different things that had taken place, ended up getting a massive amount of money kind of, you know, stolen from me from my toxic, you know, group situation that's going on. All that fell back on my parents, who came in and saved my life, you know, were able to, you know, pay off my debt, because they knew that I was sick at this point. And I made the decision. We didn't know what to do. And we went back to the psychiatrist. They played musical medications with me and said, oh, well, no, you just need more of this, more of this. You need this, you know, Prozac here to calm down this symptom and all that kind of stuff. And by this point, I was starting to realize I had a very humbling experience, life-changing experience at one point, where I just had this kind of this moment or series of moments of clarity, where I felt what was going on. I'd been brought down so low that I just, you know, the kind of ego dissolving thing where I really feel like that, you know, God was speaking to me at this time, and I realized, I started to really understand what balance was, you know, and that was really the secret to health and kind of the secret, you know, to life in general. And that I couldn't create balance with these drugs because they're not part of the innate intelligence of the body, right. You know. And you know, yeah, you know, for short term this and that, but they will drive the body out of balance and, you know, create. And I just wanted my old self back, even though that wasn't great, but it was, you know, you know what I'm saying. And at the time, I didn't know it was possible. So we, yeah. So cut to, you know, we ended up going to. I took myself off of Adderall. I said this is absolutely enough. My parents, you know, weren't sure what to do about it, and I just said, I'm not going to be this person anymore, which is not an easy thing to do, you know, because there's a denial, you want to keep taking it. I took myself off of Adderall, and that brought me into the most horrendous, when I took myself off, the masking effect was lifted, and now all the damage and dysfunction was now, you know, brought to the surface. Yeah. All of a sudden, my brain completely crashed. I couldn't function whatsoever, didn't know where I was half the time, you know what day I was, and at certain points couldn't even recognize my family, you know. I was so, so bad. Perceptual disturbance, I mean, endless, like my brain had been totally fried. And we ended up going to a lot of different places. You know, we went, you know, the first year doing the musical drugs thing because I got so desperate. Actually got checked into a psych ward just because I was so suicidal. Because right. I had nothing going on up here. I needed some sort of stimulation, and I didn't want to take drugs at this point, but I did. Until, you know, that didn't work, and I ended up going to a few different places to try to get help. Started out getting some intravenous nutraceuticals, which, you know, didn't work out so well because still just kind of, you know, throwing things allopathically at me still instead of drugs. It was the amino acids, vitamins, minerals. You know, and then I went and did some hyperbaric oxygen for a while, and that was beneficial in the short term. But now I know, you know, afterwards that, I mean, it was the wrong time and place. You know, I was a very toxic, neurotoxic, sick, inflamed, you know. And that was whenever I, shortly after that, about the summer of 2013, one day things just switched. I mean, I was deteriorating, horrible brain fog, incredible fatigue. Was on the couch for a year, like literally was on the couch for almost every single hour of the day for a year. And all of a sudden, I was eating one night, and my throat started to close up. And I've never had, you know, reactions that I knew of, right, in the past, or, you know, severe, you know, symptomatic reactions. My throat closed up. And through the next few days, everything that I ate or everything that I was doing, I was getting these massive adrenaline attacks that just came out of nowhere, and I could not breathe. And some of them even got to the point they were so severe at that point where my fingers were hyperextended, like literally I couldn't move my body, and I was basically in a mild seizure, you know, is what it was, because I would start to shake, I couldn't even move anything, you know, it was just absolutely horrendous. And it was a total adrenaline attack.
Yeah.
And that led me to try and to, you know, to figure out what was going on. Obviously, I went to, we ended up going to, you know, this place in Dallas, which is a medical research facility that a lot of chemically sensitive patients end up at, because they do some things to help control these reactions, and you know, they really kind of educate you and help you bring together this information of, you know, the bucket theory, right? You know, I had gathered bits and pieces of information. I was doing research throughout the entire time trying to survive. But, you know, I was able to really pull together and see, look, you know, this is how toxic I am. I knew that toxicity was a factor, but I didn't understand that it was, like, the thing that I had to remove. I mean, that I could never get well without. And this is why hyperbarics didn't work. This is why some of these things I tried, you know, downstream things or more downstream things, you know, didn't work, was because of that. But then, you know, once I got down there and I really got kind of educated to that, that's whenever, you know, really I started, you know, formulating the plan of what to do. Unfortunately, at that point I was so reactive that I could not, I crossed another line where all of a sudden I couldn't put any foods in my mouth. I was allergic to all foods, like literally. Any food I put in my mouth, I'd get a massive adrenaline attack where I felt like I was dying every time. The worst experience I can imagine. My throat's closing up. I'm gasping for air. And this would last 24 hours, you know, 24 hours.
I want to point something out, because I get calls like this, you know, weekly, almost daily, where I hear these stories, right? It starts with a food. It starts, I mean, most people are down here where they're reacting to a certain set of food. Some people don't even know, right? And then it becomes this symptom, that symptom, this, you know, and they realizing that they're allergic to all these foods, or at least intolerant to all these foods, and have no idea.
Right.
And I then, after a while, they end up literally intolerant to just about everything they're eating. I have many, especially young kids today. This is more, you know, prevalent with younger kids, where they're eating 3 to 5 foods without reacting. Oh, and then when they eat those for a while, then they actually start reacting to those, and they have to go back to foods they haven't eaten in a while. So I want my viewers to understand that this is becoming a massive epidemic.
Oh, it is.
The massive amounts of neurotoxins that we're exposed to, you know, watch our previous shows to figure that out. But this is a massive problem. This is not something that you know, is exclusive to you.
Right. And honestly, when it happened to me, I thought that it was, because obviously no one in my particular environment here, my immediate family or even friends or anything, you know, it was just so bizarre. All of a sudden, one day, which it didn't happen one day, I started becoming somewhat sensitive to supplements, but not anything like these, and then got to this realm, so I couldn't eat anything. And now I'm sensitive to smells, and things just kept getting worse and worse. And I thought that I was some sort of a crazy anomaly, because obviously every single doctor that I went to either laughed at me or they said, no, it's impossible. You can't react to everything, of course. I mean, we've heard it 1,000 times. It wasn't until I kind of found this place, and at least they understood, you know, that, you know, that's what was taking place. And that all of a sudden I find myself in the middle of this community of people who are exactly like me. Some even like worse. They're in wheelchairs. They're coming in every single day. And so bad to where it really, this whole situation has just totally expanded my perception of what's possible, right? You know, because before, I mean, I'm sure I would have been one of those people who said, you know, this guy says he's reacting to his refrigerator or his iPod, you know, are you crazy kind of thing? I get here and I've seen people and I've met people and spent massive amounts of time with patients that their living conditions are so horrendous. I mean, people could not imagine what these people deal with every single day. I mean, they get severe reactions that you know, are what would be considered suicidal reactions. They're getting them dozens of times, even hundreds of times a day, you know? And I've met some people.
Chemicals or a food.
Absolutely.
To an environment. Someone comes in with maybe a lotion that has a fragrance on. These people go into convulsion. These people react massively.
Oh, gosh. And so you end up being absolutely, your freedoms are taken away one by one by one by one, and then all of a sudden, or maybe a lot at once, to where all you can do is quarantine yourself in some sort of a safe housing, trying to make your house as safe as possible, rip up the carpet, do air purifiers, what, you know, air exchange systems or, you know, whatever, eat completely organic as much as you possibly can, and then try to clean it up as much as you can. But, you know, some of these people, they can even react to their clothes. I mean, I've known people who have had to stay quarantined and stay naked all of the time. They can't leave their house, and they're literally just reacting to almost everything. And the EMF sensitivity is horrendous, because
that's electromagnetic frequencies is what he's talking about, folks. You know, and people, like he said, people reacting to the refrigerator. I've had several of those patients that couldn't stand next to the refrigerator.
Absolutely.
A moving fan, it puts off an amount of electromagnetic frequency that most people would be able to tolerate. You know, God forbid they put a phone to their head. They literally, it sends their system, you know, into a reaction. Why? It's one more stressor that a healthy body can deal with. Their body can't deal with one thing that causes any oxidative stress. Of course, an EMF does. So this became your reality, just like so many clients.
No, absolutely.
Your way of getting there was different than some other people's way, right? I mean, some people's way is this, you know, massive, you know, it was a combination, you know, mold, chemicals, stressors, you're right, genetics, toxins when you were born, you know, I mean, all these things come together. I call it the perfect storm.
Yeah.
Storm is a little bit different, but what you're experiencing is a modern day epidemic of people. You know, it's some level on the scale. Yeah, you're out here. But I see people all the way across the scale of sensitivities. Most of them don't know it. They don't realize they're reacting to smells. They don't realize they're reacting to their carpet, their new furniture, their new phone, the flame retardant on their new computer. You know, but they are. And this is a massive epidemic, you know. And so fast forward because of the sake of time. And there's so much to tell, right? It is an amazing story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, your body, just like so many of these cases that I see, finally brings you down to where you literally can't eat anything. You literally went 14 days without food, and at least 5 days even without water. You even started reacting to water. So quickly take us through that, and let's tell them what you did, you know, how your body, you know, came out of that.
Right. And I think at that point I'd actually done some, at least minor healing for sure, because, you know, for the first year I spent time in Dallas, which is where this facility was. I live in Arkansas, but we just had to kind of move down there and stay in this safe housing, stay in a different apartment that was safe eventually. But the only thing that I was able to do for a year were just very basic, non-invasive, you know, modalities, you know, things that work with, you know, the energy systems of the body, you know, some chiropractic stuff to just kind of try to get things, keep things moving, get my body detoxing enough, a lot of grounding outside, things like that, just to try to get my body strong enough to where I could actually do some things that truly, you know, do deep detox, right, obviously. And that was a year, year and a half. And then at this point, my guess, you know, as good as it, I got to a point where, you know, I was moving things around, maybe it was detoxing something really heavily, who knows, but I was actually had gained back a lot of my, you know, some of my foods at least. Couldn't do supplements, no way at this point, no way, had a few foods that I was working with. For a long time I only had one. And, you know, it got to this point, and then all of a sudden I couldn't, yeah, like you said, I couldn't eat any food. I couldn't even take a sip of water. I couldn't put anything in my mouth down my gastrointestinal tract without my throat closing up and having a horrendous adrenaline attack that lasted, you know, a day, you know, and I was just getting worse and worse. And so, you know, the big thing was the water, you know, because a lot of people do things with fast and stuff, but the water, you deteriorate so, so quickly. Yeah. So, you know, long story short, I ended up going 5 days without drinking water. Now, I didn't go 5 days without foods in my system. I went almost three days without, you know, without anything once this happened. And on that third day, I was in an emergency situation, obviously, because I was already chronically sick. And, yeah, I was on death's door, you know. And so we got some IV fluids into me. Finally, which I didn't do right off the bat because I had reacted to them in the past. Yeah. So I was afraid I was going to react and I was going to be worse. And so at this point, you start to get dehydrated, you're even that much more hyperreactive, you know, the more, because that fight or flight system. So I was terrified of doing anything because I thought, you know, it was going to kill me, you know, at that point when I was that weak. But it came down to that point where on that third day, I had to get fluids in my system. I tried to drink, didn't work, could not, you know. So I had to, you know, basically go back, you know, to this facility, which is kind of like an emergency facility for, you know, chemically sensitive patients. I'm really glad it's there for sure. I just kind of had to take a leap of faith. They said, well, you have to get fluids in your system today because your body is shutting down. I mean, I looked absolutely terrible, you know. And we did. Me and my mom were in there. I was trying not to be in tears to work up my system anymore. My mom was. I was wanting to call, you know, my brothers, my dad. I was wanting to call everybody and just, you know, because I was at that point where I knew this could go either way. You know, if I didn't get fluids in my system today, then I possibly was going to die. Yeah. And so I did it, and we just prayed right before. My mom and I think, held hands while we were doing it, and we just they took, you know, they brought out the, you know, the saline, put it in my arm, started bringing it in, and sure enough, I didn't react. And it was like the only thing in my environment that I wasn't reacting to, you know, and it was just like, oh my gosh. And that wasn't the end of it. They were only able to do a liter that day, and that wasn't nearly enough, but it was enough to get me to the next day. And for the next few days after that, they did that, and I actually continued to deteriorate because I just wasn't getting enough to even come close to catching up to, because I had been dehydrated, you know, in the weeks before that too. But the interesting thing was, so, you know, basically, long story short, you know, throughout this, I was already going out, I was going without food for a while before this kind of, you know, 5 day water thing, you know, was going on. But, you know, basically I went, you know, through this whole process, I went almost 2 weeks without food, 12, 13 days, you know, without food at all. And, you know, during that process, golly, I was, so just, you know, some things I noticed, I was smelling, my tongue was turning all these weird colors, and there was this kind of enhanced, you know, Herxheimer, you know, detox reaction that was going on. And I stunk worse than anything. It was just was barely able to walk, and all I barely was able to walk, and I'm surprised that I was able to do that. But it hit a certain point, like on that fifth day, it was like down to like crunch time, you know, where yeah, I had gotten some fluids in my system, it wasn't nearly enough. I had to have, you know, more water. I had to be able to drink. And all of a sudden, we were sitting in there, and they do these little skin testing antigens where they can, you know, get a reaction down by finding a particular endpoint. And it's kind of murky exactly how it all works down to the T, but it does work, you know, for a lot of patients. Anyway, so they skin tested me, which I was afraid of doing bad because I was just, we were trying to get fluids in my system, and I was starting to react to the IVs now too. And I felt like I was about to die. I mean, I felt like I was in full-fledged delirium at this point.
Yeah.
I was saying things that were so out of, you know, like crazy. But so I had them skin test me on water. They had a skin test actually for a Mountain Valley water. They made one up. And, you know, sure enough, there was no wheel, there's no reaction. I'm just saying, whoa. It was like, there's a point where it felt like my body made a shift. It was within a couple of hours. It was like I've been brought to a certain point in my lowest, and I was like, oh my gosh, give me the water, you know? And then they tested me. I had them test me on, because I wanted to get some calories in my system, they tested me on apples, and I had no reaction to that. It's where I was whelping like crazy. It was this massive, you know, hyperreactive circumstance. And I didn't react to that either. Just all of a sudden, like this switch went off. And I had my parents go grab me some apple juice. I started drinking it, and I didn't react. And I started drinking it, and I just started.
Yeah, we're running out of time, Cameron. But so, you know, bottom line is, you know, the fast, like I've seen many, many times.
Yeah.
Things happen. Things shift. Now all of a sudden, things you reacted to, you were able to do, right? So you said 12 days without food. You know, 5 days without water, you know, the body went through this process, and, you know, and sure enough, you know, the body opens up again, you know, and again, seeing that many, many times, you know, I mean, that's the power, you know, of the fast. And then you started, you know, there was a product, a SIA, that, you know, you're able to take little amounts of, you know, and of course that was, you know, when you and I started, you know, working together and a little bit more of that. And now we're to the point, because we have to, you know, draw this to a conclusion. I mean, you're eating almost everything. I mean, it's a remarkable. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're still all healthy foods, but you're eating all these great foods. You put on weight. You don't look like the same person that when I sat across the screen from you the first time, you know, man, you still look close to death, right? I mean, you know, you look like a different person. And now we've even started some detox. I mean, the ASEA product even, you know, detoxes you. But that little liquid product is oftentimes, you know, one of the first things that people can tolerate. You know, it's redox molecules, and we don't have time to get into that. But tolerating, you know, some different other supplements that we've been giving you, and, you know, you're starting to, you know, take on some cellular products and, you know, even small amounts of detox. So you've come.
Well, that's a huge thing, because I've been able to tolerate supplements of any kind for years without severe reactions, you know. And after I came through that fast, you know, like you talked, just to touch on real quick, I was better. All of a sudden I could do more things. And then we tried some of these things, obviously in small amounts at first, like the ASEA, like the cell detox drops, and I can tolerate them and I can work with them. I have to work with them slowly, but it's just amazing. I mean, you know, I feel like all the things that we're doing with the bacteria, you know, I mean, everything, the combination, it's great. I mean, I still have a long way to go. I mean, honestly, I do. But just where I'm at right now, I'm just so grateful. Like we were talking about before, it's all relative once you get to this point. Yes, I still experience hell, you know, some degree on days. But absolutely, from where I've been and, you know, and where I am now, and the fact that we're making progress.
Yeah.
And I understand the concepts involved, and you're so incredible at explaining it. I'm so blessed that you decided to take me on, because I could see, I could see that you were worried whenever I talked to you the first time, for sure, because it's hard, you know, very complicated situations.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been down this road enough times with enough people, you know, and myself included, you know, it's somewhere on that, you know, thing. I became intolerant to my world as well, you know, food. Yeah. Chemicals, I couldn't function. I couldn't, you know, go out ever, you know, with comfort because of a smell, a cologne, you know, and it, you just become isolated in your own little world. The only way I can understand it, Cameron, is because I've been there. You know, it's like, and, you know, that's it. There's no other way a doctor can understand. And, you know, just like anything, you know, we tap into the innate intelligence. And oftentimes, I said it at the beginning of the show, your body made you fast. You know, I'm doing fasting, different fast with people, because that's a way of healing, you know. And then you bring in, you know, enough cellular, you know, function, and, you know, the body will heal. You know, really, you remove the interference, the body will heal. And, you know, we got your cells functioning enough, you know, to this point, and, you know, now we're able to start doing some light detox and start emptying the bucket. You know, but man, I could go on with a whole nother hour even just of what we've done, you know, and how we've got there.
I know, it's so hard to condense, you know, because
it was having trouble at the top of the show with the technology, you know, it's a remarkable story, Cameron, and you know, we'll have to bring you on in the future again, because mm-hmm. that way people can watch the beginning of the show, and then we'll talk about some things we've been doing. You know, Cameron, and I want to do that because you're not an anomaly. I mean, you know, your story and how you got there, I think, is really, you know, unique with some of the things. You know, I think the Muslims tip that off. But, you know, really, it's not unique at all. You know, kids on Adderall, kids eating the foods that they eat today. You know, it really is a story that I hear again and again. And the story that I hear most often is, I can't eat these foods, and I'm allergic to this and that and this, and this story is being told again and again. And there's a way out, Cameron. You know, and you're proving that. There's a way out. You just have to be willing to do it. And so, you know, I hope you join us again so we can just kind of see this progression. And I think many people are looking for answers, Cameron, and they would, in this show, they probably wanted us to go into these things that we're doing even more. You know what I'm saying? But cellular healing, I mean, honestly, the things that we're doing, you know, the fasting is really what gave the leverage even to get to where we are now. In cellular detox, you know, I mean, that's it. You remove the interference, you know, the body can do the healing, Cameron. So
absolutely.
Yeah, and again, so I hate to draw to a conclusion, but we have to because of the sake of time, but we're going to have you back on so we can talk about more about some of these things, okay?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Anytime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? It was worth, you know, running over, because you have an incredible story, and I said it also at the top of the show. You know, I believe God has allowed you to go through this, you know, because you are going to have major authority in this area. You know, you've been called to something very great. Just with your story alone, you know, you're giving many people watching this right now a lot of hope. You know, you were on death's door, and look at you now. I wish they could see the camera that I saw across the screen, you know, not that long ago,
yeah.
You know, and you know how fast your body is really pulling it together. So,
well, yeah, and if you would have seen me too, you know, a year before that, you know,
yeah.
where
yeah.
it's just yeah. absolutely yeah. knocking on death's door there for sure.
Yeah.
That living effect, you know.
No doubt. So, thank you for sharing. That's an amazing story, Cameron. I can't wait to have you on again.
Yeah.
Tell your mom and dad thanks. I saw Marion earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, man. And like I said, can't wait to see you again.
The information shared on today's show can be accessed through our websites, drpompa.com and revelationhealth.com. This Cellular Healing TV episode and past shows are also available for download on iTunes. Help others get real health solutions by liking, reviewing, and sharing our podcasts.